all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Back with you here on this Friday morning, April 26th, 2024. Nice to have you along. Coming up this hour, basically a supreme disappointment from some members of the Supreme Court, where it appears that some of the justices there hearing arguments yesterday would be more than happy to help former President Trump acquire immunity powers that no president has ever enjoyed until now. We'll talk to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about that. We'll also talk about the business fraud trial that Trump is involved in that's wrapping up its first week of court testimony. We'll talk to Mark Jacob from the Stop the Press's newsletter, also about what has been happening and how these events have been covered so far this week. So that, and Dan Schumacher will be here, our favorite Bears fan, our only Bears fan allowed on this radio show, I think, unless somebody's sneaking in there. Wait a minute. I'm looking at you, Brittany. You're not secretly a Bears fan over there, are you?
Because you're from Illinois.
I am from Illinois.
I know. I immediately got suspicious. She got this sheepish look on her face, like, look down.
Come clean, Miss Merlot. Well,
I just don't know how there's any Bears fans left. That team is just so terrible.
We'll
just put it that way.
Okay.
Definitely Packers.
They are the most self-aware fans. They are the most self-aware. Like halfway through the first game of the season, like, well, we're eliminated, so.
True.
Well, they got that from their Vikings fans friends. Robin Tigerton says it's sunny over there right now and 34 degrees. Our discussion with Meatloaf earlier, he says, I have the original Meatloaf cassette with dashboard, paradise by the dashboard light, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Also, Carol Burnett's birthday we mentioned earlier, loved her playing Eunice on Mama's Family. Yeah. And of course, the Carol Burnett show was such a classic.
So, Brittany, do you know what a cassette is?
I do. Okay. I do. I'm an elder millennial. I've got this.
Elder millennial. I love that. It's a 43 up here on Lake Wissota and in Hayward, 38 in Park Falls, 39 in Wausau. Green Bay's at 40, La Crosse 47. Wisconsin Rapids is up to 40 now. Oshkosh 44, Madison 42, Waukesha 39. And by the way, Brittany, for folks going, why do you guys always give the Waukesha temperature? We never hear, you know, the temperature at the Milwaukee Airport over at Mitchell Field. Well, because they're by the lake. You know, it's not the same. And I know from 4 years of living there, when we lived in West Allis, the conditions at Mitchell can be a lot different than conditions in, you know, West Allis, Waukesha, Brookfield, places like that.
Oh, that's true. They sure can. That lake does so much to the temperatures and the actual weather as well. So, today, are you guys ready for the big storms?
I looked an hour ago, and that is a tremendous blob o precip that's going to be moving into Wisconsin before too long.
That was the perfect wording. Blob o precip.
Brittany, you tell the bad news while I just look out the sunshine and the blue skies I see right now in Waukesha.
The last of it.
The last of it. Those clouds are going to be thickening as we go throughout the next few hours. And we are looking at the rain striking by this afternoon and into this evening, depending on where you are in the state. That's going to be moving in as this low pressure system is taking off into Nebraska. It's going to slowly move towards us. And it's not even going to get here today. This is all out ahead of the system. It's going to be draping a warm front through the state tomorrow, and it's actually going to soar our temperatures to the 70s to near 80 degrees. And I will tell you, there is some good news in there because there is pockets of sunshine possible on Saturday before the other front hits us. So we've got a bunch of things going on right now. I'm going to give you the details. So basically expect some rain, light to moderate rain to hit throughout this afternoon and into the evening hours. The storm chances will become a little bit more widespread as we go through this evening. Then we'll see a little break through tomorrow morning and through the afternoon. If you see a lot of sunshine, you're probably going to have more chances of strong to severe storms Saturday evening. So keep that in mind, especially through the southern half of the state. We're actually in a slight risk for them to turn severe, which would be large hail, maybe even a tornado or two as well. So Saturday night, keep your eyes to the sky, stay weather savvy. And this severe chance also rolls in through Sunday too. We've got two low pressures that are smacking. So we have to deal with the first one and then the other one on Sunday into Monday. So we're looking at anywhere from a half an inch of rain today to 1 to 2 inches additional Saturday night and into Sunday. So we could definitely see some localized flooding. You're going to want that umbrella, the rain boots, the whole 10 yards.
Wow. And I like that. That's going to be your new thing, is to stay weather savvy.
Thank
with
you.
Brittany, yeah. Where she talks about systems mashing into each other. How did you say it? Smacking into each other?
Probably. Who knows what I say?
DJ Flipmix says, stay savvy and watch out for those blobs of precip.
Yeah.
Right. You stay savvy out there, and we'll talk to you Monday morning.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Brittany. We'll see you later. Hey, we're going to be joined a little early here by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, and for perfectly good reason. What a week it's been. So Jim has the show Amicus on Saturdays at 9 o'clock live, and you can hear it again on Sunday. And I don't even know if 2 hours is going to be enough for you. I'm giving you like 20 minutes here, less than that. You got 2 hours tomorrow. That's probably not enough to get into everything. Jim, how are you?
Pat, I'm doing well, thanks. Good to see you and Greg once again. And yes, lots of things regrettably end up on the cutting room floor. I know that's true of your wonderful program as well. But boy, going through the inventory just the past week to 10 days, things like the fact that the Harvey Weinstein conviction in New York was overturned. Mm-hmm. We've got more fake electors and insurrectionists, so to speak, in other states have been charged. All of that secondary headlines this week to other things that are much on the agenda of America.
So much so, and we'll get to the hush money election interference case in just a little bit, but the big one from yesterday was the arguments that were made before the U.S. Supreme Court dealing with former President Trump's claim of absolute immunity, and the discussion started to kind of get into the weeds from my point of view of official acts versus non-official acts, and which ones can be criminal and which can't. And Jim, I just saw a lot of frustration on social media that there was so much time spent on hypotheticals and not the very real, very serious things that are at the center of this case, which involve a former president trying to overturn an election. From your view of the arguments and what the justices were saying, did you get any of that same sense, a lack of urgency on their part?
Absolutely. A lack of urgency with respect to timing, certainly, which we should chat about as well. Beyond that, this fundamental notion, as Pat, you and I have chatted before, what are we talking about here? We're seriously parsing out some various categorizations and classifications based upon the circumstances under which a president of the United States of America can and cannot commit crimes. You and I have chatted before, and my fundamental notion was, number one, there is no such blanket immunity. And to their credit, the United States Supreme Court, almost to a person, said, yes, there's not blanket, not complete immunity, but there may be some areas where, in fact, again, as you just accurately noted, between official acts and, say, personal acts, and we can make some distinctions there, and we should parse that and come through some sort of a standard that lower courts can use. No, the answer is there is none. We do not have kings in this country. And instead, the Supreme Court seems to be indicating, yes, indeed, there's something to what Donald Trump and his attorneys have been saying. Michael Dreeben, who is the spectacular Deputy Solicitor General, speaking and responding to all the questions yesterday, you could tell was frustrated, but highly professional, highly appropriate in responding to this attempt to try to draw these distinctions. And along the way, as you just said, also responding, but trying to get the Supreme Court back to this case, to all of these hypotheticals out there. Now, courts on a regular basis do explore that. They think about what the next case is all about. But here, you don't have to do that at all. You don't have to be concerned about setting precedent down the road if you simply say that someone in their capacity as the President of the United States of America attempted to undermine the election, attempted to undermine the counting of votes on January 6th, and attempted to stay in power, which is what the 4-count indictment against Donald Trump is in the D.C. Court. If you simply say that, we can be done with this, not in 3 hours, which is what they took, but frankly, 3 minutes. And that's what should have happened yesterday. It did not.
No, it did not. And the fact that you had people like Justice Samuel Alito saying some ridiculous things like, well, if you're going to go after former presidents, then that means former presidents are going to try to stage a coup to stay in power. And it's like you're giving him an excuse to do what he did after the fact. And I'm reminded, Jim, of the old Jim Carrey movie, Liar, Liar, where he plays an attorney and one of his clients is calling from jail again. And I can't use every word in the quote, but he basically screams into the phone, "Stop breaking the law." And that's all that Samuel Alito needs to consider is whether this guy's breaking the law now.
Right. Precisely. Decide this case. Decide what's in front of you right now. We're not talking. There was a discussion about pardon authority, which may in fact become relevant in American history, depending upon who we elect in November. But all of those kinds of things, all of these other hypotheticals, and they also, and the cynicism from a Justice Alito and others raising these prospects also suggests once again, and perhaps accurately, that we are now in a position, arguably, to elect someone we've never elected before in our nation's history. Someone who would think about conducting a coup, who doesn't understand that, yes, indeed, you have a four-year term as the president. Constitutionally, you're restricted to two such terms, and that's it. All of these things presume the worst in the person who we will elect as president of the United States of America. What tremendous cynicism that is, how completely contrary that is. Frankly, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, we have always elected people who understand the limits of their authority and who talk about abiding by the Constitution. Instead, yesterday, the Supreme Court exploring options for someone who decides purposely to undermine the very foundations of our nation. What if we elect him? How can we possibly deal with that? Well, the answer is, stop the behavior right now, to the good point you're making, Pat. Deter it right now and let this prosecution go ahead.
Exactly. And we're going to continue this discussion with Jim Santel in just a moment. We've got just enough time before the break here to tell you first that the Brewers were able to beat the Pittsburgh Pirates yesterday, wrapping up that four-game series. Final score there was, that's not the right bookmark at all. I want to say it was... Look at this. It might tip me right into the commercial break to get this question answered. There we go. Brewers. 7-5. Hey, there we go. Gary Sanchez with an eighth inning pinch hit home run to end the road trip with a 5-2 record. And now the Brewers are home for six games, the first three against the Yankees starting tonight. More with Jim Santel after this. You're up north. That, of course, is the distinctive voice of Kate Pearson, a founding member of the B-52s. She turns 77 years old tomorrow, so early happy birthday to her. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel has Amicus Law Review live Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And we are talking a bit about the many cases involving the former president of the United States. And before we leave the Supreme Court one on immunity, Jim, what I do want to ask about is the credibility of this, not just from what the conservative justices said yesterday, but the fact that two of them are well known now for accepting gifts from billionaires and not reporting them. And three of them, of course, were appointed by the person accused of criminal conduct. I don't know how you square that circle. I just know between those two factors and others, it just doesn't look good. It does not help the cynicism that many Americans have.
I think that's right. And you combine those issues with a sense that indeed our Supreme Court may be embracing this notion that we can accept some criminality inside the White House, inside the executive branch, and the reputation of the Supreme Court continues to devolve, if you will. Absolutely. We've got this more than small amount of information to indicate that we've got two justices, Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas, taking gifts, other things, deciding cases that they should not be deciding. They should be recusing themselves in a number of different areas. And again, we've got appointments admittedly by a former president, but nonetheless now those same justices hearing a case involving the future of the very person who nominated them, who secured their positions on the Supreme Court.
Their lifetime positions.
Lifetime positions. Tenure under the Supreme Court forever. Mm-hmm. Under any other better circumstances, we would have recusals of five of them. And you might say, well, gee, how can the Supreme Court then possibly decide a case? Well, they may never have recusals with five people, but certainly they've done it. Other justices, including Ketanji Brown Jackson, has already recused herself in cases where she feels that there is simply the possibility that people might look and say, gosh, should be deciding that. That's the other issue here, is reputation of the court. This yesterday just further destroys that, what I've always regarded as a court that, right or wrong in terms of my own perspective on what they're doing, always had that integrity. Today, in the early part of the 21st century, we wonder if that is the case anymore.
I do wonder. I wonder about that a lot. Let's move over now to the trial in Manhattan, that criminal trial involving hush money payments. We're going to be talking with Mark Jacob in a couple of minutes, and I'm going to get into the whole notion of the National Enquirer literally making up news to cover for the president. But as the former publisher of the National Enquirer, David Pecker, returns to the stand today for cross-examination, what's going to happen is the defense lawyers reported they are going to try to discredit the idea that whatever their relationship was, that it was some kind of a plot to protect Trump in the 2016 presidential campaign. Can you explain, you know, where that line is metaphorically, that, you know, discussions versus like an actual conspiratorial plot that would be illegal? Or is it always like the justice said about pornography? I can't define it, but I know it when I see it.
There's a little bit of that I know it when I see it. But the reality is, we do have standards on this. And David Pecker, again, for two and a half, three days, is describing just that kind of a conspiracy with a capital C. And that is not specifically charged here. We're charging violations of New York law when it comes to financial reporting. But he is describing, if you will, this agreement, which is what a conspiracy is, that we, in fact, are going to get together. We're going to plan. We're going to plot, if you will. We're going to make certain that the American public does not know about not just one, not just two, but three different instances in which the president has dark things in his past, or the future president that time. Two of them involve sexual relationships. One of them involves, again, an untested and frankly false statement about his fathering another child. That's the doorman piece of this. The other pieces of this are Karen McDougal and, of course, Stormy Daniels. And what David Pecker very compellingly testifies to, and I think this is the big takeaway, talk about credibility on a guy who otherwise you'd look at and say, gee, National Enquirer talking about catching and killing. And I know that again, you're going to talk more about that in your next segments here. You might look at that and say, gosh, this is not someone to be believed. The difficulty with the David Pecker cross-examination here is he offers so many things that support his credibility. Among other things, he says, you know what? I like Donald Trump. He's still my friend. This is not somebody like Michael Cohen who's going to come in a few days and say how much he presumably does not like Michael Cohen. And most importantly, arguably, David Pecker kept contemporary notes on these agreements, again, to pay these women off, to capture their stories, and to keep them from the American public. That, again, that's the kind of plot, the kind of conspiracy, if you will, that a jury can not only embrace but can understand. Based upon his testimony, he kept specific notes about conversations. He was upset that after the first two times paying for this, that he was going to pay money again for Stormy Daniels, and said, wait a minute, I'm not a bank. Somebody's got to pay for this. And that's when Donald Trump and Michael Cohen stepped forward. All of this to say, my friend Pat, it's credible testimony. It is testimony about criminal activity, yes. And yes, indeed, he says, yes, I knew it was probably violations of the election laws. He acknowledges all of that. What an incredible testimonial presence this is. That's why the jury, I think, is watching him and thinking, this guy, for all the things we don't like about him, maybe somewhat smarmy, he's telling us the truth. It is difficult today to do a cross-examination of this man.
Let's turn to fake electors in wrapping things up here. And the somewhat, well, I won't say surprising news. I didn't follow it closely. Maybe it's not a surprise. But that the attorney general in Arizona, who, again, only won her election by 280 votes. So your vote counts, boys and girls. But that attorney general now is the latest in the several states that have gone after the fake electors, either about fraud or, you know, what have you. So let's get back to what can these fake electors theoretically be charged with? Because, again, we've got people defending them saying, well, they were just following instructions. This was just a contingency. What is the legal hot water that they're in?
Sure, it is. It is still understanding that you are executing a statement in which you are misrepresenting who you are. And again, I understand the argument that, well, the lawyers were telling me this was okay, and it was just in case everything fell apart in Washington. Yes, that's the kind of defense you would raise. But I always ask the question, Pat, if you were presented with a document and the document said that you are the executive director of a major corporation, identify what it is. You're the chief of staff of a medical facility in upstate Wisconsin. And someone says to you, just sign off on this, certify that you are this person, but don't worry, we're not really going to use it, it's not real. Would you do that? And the answer is no, you wouldn't. Because even if you're somehow relying upon lawyers for arcane areas of corporate law, tax law, this is not that. That's what Arizona has now charged, again, joining Nevada and Georgia and Michigan among the states that have charged the fake electors. And oh, by the way, the new charges also as to Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and others, including unindicted co-conspirator number one, that's Donald Trump. We've got another state prosecutor who has gone down this road.
I could completely see that happening yet. And again, in Wisconsin, the official answer is officially, we don't know, because they don't comment on whether an investigation is going on until or unless they bring some kind of charges or announcement or closure. Jim Santel, you can hear it all tomorrow on Amicus Law Review, starting live at 9 a.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network. Jim, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Pat, always great to be with you. We'll see you next week, my friend. Have a good weekend yourself.
Thank you. Care. Mark Jacob is coming up next. You're up north. News Radio, let's jump right into things here because it's been that kind of a crazy week with Mark Jacob, who has the Stop the Presses newsletter. Mark, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great.
Where I really want to spend some time is on this new reporting by Politico about the New York Times and their feud with the Biden administration. And so we'll get to that, but let's just continue the segue from what Jim Santel was talking about. And we mentioned in our last hour as well, the coverage of the trials involving Trump at the Supreme Court, as well as Manhattan and the hush money case. And I will admit that one of the questions I asked Jim a few minutes ago, Mark, came not quite word for word from one of your tweets yesterday, which said, if this was a functioning democracy, we wouldn't be waiting for two justices who took secret gifts from billionaires and three others appointed by a criminal to tell us whether it's okay for the president to murder his rivals. In other words, Mark, what you're saying, what we're all saying, this is all so unnecessary, and it is foot dragging, and it is partisan politics on our Supreme Court, something as unseemly as it gets.
It's really alarming. I mean, the reason I wrote that tweet is because it's an absurd moment. It's something that I think could not have been imagined, you know, a decade or so ago. That, I mean, we're discussing whether the president can do whatever he wants. This is a democracy. That's not supposed to be the case. Yet you had Trump's lawyers arguing that a military coup would be okay. And then you have people like Alito and Thomas, and clearly, Pat, Alito and Thomas are clearly on the right wing, extreme right wing, and they don't care. As long as they have power, they don't care about a free democracy. I mean, they're just, we're in a terrible state with the Supreme Court. I remember the moment I heard that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had died. And I thought that was the one thing that couldn't happen to save us. That was the one thing. She just had to live past the election or past the Trump administration. And it didn't happen. I just remember how low I was. And all the reasons I was concerned about it then have come to pass. I mean, because You just have, you know, you have the Supreme Court that is, that clearly wants to delay the trial so that Trump doesn't have to face charges before his election. I mean, that's the only motive. You had this great, really smart decision by the appellate court that the Supreme Court could have said, oh, okay, let's move on. Mm-hmm. But instead, they're doing all this foot dragging, and they're probably going to kick it back to the district court for more foot dragging.
Yes, they will. And it's just, again, a depressing case of people putting power and party above country, but also would not have been a thing if Mitch McConnell hadn't handled two right. different Supreme Court vacancies in the way that he did, or that Mitch McConnell had handled two impeachments in the way that he did. And when we talk about what a dark place our country is in right now, it is just really jarring to think what a better place we'd be in if we could tell our kids in their history classes about the time when Republicans in the United States stood up and agreed with the impeachment and or the criminal trial of one of their own because they understood he broke the law and you should put the law ahead of everything else.
Right, right. Well, they were like maybe 9 or 10. There were a few Republicans who did vote for, you know, in favor of impeachment in the U.S. Senate for the second time. But it drives me crazy when you hear people talk about, well, Mitch McConnell, he's feuding with Donald Trump and all that. He's the one person who could have made it impossible for Trump to come back to the presidency. And he didn't do it.
No.
And I mean, he's a villain in American history, just clearly. Yeah. And there are a lot of them, Pat. I mean, but it's a depressing time. I thought yesterday was really depressing that the Supreme Court was spending its time discussing of whether a president could be a dictator. And that's really what they were discussing. I mean, just hearing the words come out of my mouth, I think they couldn't possibly be discussing that. But that's what they were discussing. And the only way we can stop them is by defeating Trump this time in November. I mean, I'm starting to think that that's the last chance. I mean, because we're in scary times and people need to, you know, they need to skip the next Netflix movie and go volunteer or just use their credit card, send some money to some candidate who's going to help us stop this.
Or go see Civil War as I did last weekend.
Yeah, and I saw it too.
And it's just, again, it's incredibly dark, but it's kind of that reminder of this is how much darker things could be, folks, right. if we let things go down this particular path. All right, let's get into it seems like every week we've got some kind of an issue with the New York Times because of the tone or the tenor of their coverage. Something has always seemed off about, you know, what is it that is making Biden either weak or a bad guy in their eyes when they wouldn't have seen anything else in that way? Well, an article in Politico kind of provides some answers. Mark, what's the kerfuffle all about? What is it that we think we've learned about New York Times management?
Well, you know, the Politico had a big story yesterday about the kind of shadow war between the New York Times and the Biden administration. And one of the main clashes is that the New York Times is demanding an interview with Biden, a long form interview, and Biden refuses to give them one. And so, interestingly, according to one unnamed person in the story, and it was an unnamed source, so, you know, I don't love unnamed sources, but this unnamed source in the New York Times said that the main reason that there was a lot of negative coverage about Biden in the New York Times was that they wouldn't give him the interview, and which is just shocking. You know, it's just kind of, I mean, you know, that the New York Times would go bad on the only candidate who can stop us from having a dictator elected simply because they want a damn interview. And, the thing about it is the New York Times, I wrote a column for the Stop the Press's newsletter a couple weeks ago about that mentioned, you know, Sulzberger, the publisher, A.G. Sulzberger, him talking in London about, you know, press independence and how everyone wants us to take sides and we refuse to take sides and all that, and kind of putting himself up as some sort of, you know, icon of objectivity. But when you see this kind of thing where it's what I call performative objectivity, where you pretend that both sides are equal so that you can be stand above the fray and you're just criticizing both sides and that makes you super fair, you know, and it's not, the thing about it is, you know, if a bank robber and a little baby are both on the street in front of me, they're not both equal. I mean, it's you know, wake up. You know, Biden, to me, and I'm not a super Biden fan. I mean, I think he's overachieved as president, but I wasn't in favor of him as the Democratic candidate. And I feel like he's this middle of the road Democrat, the same kind of Democrat we've seen for decades and decades. On the other side, you have a guy who wants to be a dictator, who says that his opponents are vermin, who says that immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country. I mean, wake up, New York Times. This idea that you think that everyone's equal is hurting us. It's just harming us really a lot, I think.
And then there was just the sense of entitlement from Sulzberger, the publisher, saying that like only they and they alone, through a long form interview, can determine whether he is too old to be president, right, or something right. like that. I mean, it was just such a
well. And also the thing about it is that you should mention for the listeners is that after that story came out, the New York Times actually issued a statement about it, which was mm-hmm. extraordinary. A statement saying, well, Biden won't give us an interview, but we're standing up for principles, which to me does not make them more fair. It makes them less fair. If I were on their staff, if I was an editor in their newsroom, I'd be super alarmed by that, because by doing that, they set themselves up in opposition to Biden. And it's all, Pat, it's all, I don't think the New York Times wants a dictatorship. What I'm worried about is that they don't care. Is that they don't care one way or another, we'll be fine. We're just going to report the, you know, balls and strikes. It's fine. And it's all arrogance by the New York Times. It's the New York Times thinking that it wants to be a big player, wants to throw its weight around. It wants politicians to kiss its butt. And that's what their motive is.
I am reminded of one of the famous lines from The Godfather that in so many words says, you know, it's not personal. It was strictly business. And that now we're in the business of journalism is about getting that access and throwing your weight around. And you have forgotten the personal, which is, you know, a free press in a democracy and the lack of a free press if democracy goes away. No different than, again, political parties these days. We'll pick on the Republicans, but you can for the Democrats too. Far too often it's about the business that they're in, raising the money and getting on TV and winning elections rather than the personal, which is getting things passed. Now, in our last hour, we did talk about some of the many things that the Biden administration did get passed in their first 2 years, but it's the business side of this, from politicians to media people, that are what make the voters so cynical. And the New York Times response to, you know, being called out on their habits, to simply say, to double down, as you know, the cliche goes these days, to double down and say, well, there's a reason why we do this. It was not helpful. There was no sense of closure to wrap up the week saying, oh, maybe we'll see a different attitude from the New York Times. Right. We're not going to see that, are we?
No, we're not. And tomorrow is the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Oh. Which I'm, you know, some people in journalism think it's a great thing. And hey, it harkens back to the old days when we all got along and nobody was mean to each other and all that kind of crap. I think it's always been a really embarrassing moment for the press. I think it's the press chumming up with, having drinks with, laughing, yucking it up with the people they're supposed to be seriously covering. Oh, I think it diminishes the media's credibility, and it also sets it up to where the media wants to be kind of a co-equal player in or influencer in the U.S. government, and the press's job is to examine government and what it's doing, and tell the people what they're doing, what they're not doing, and why it matters to them. That's their job. It's not like sitting at a table with some politician and yucking it up. That's not what their job is.
Right. No, it comes back to, again, the celebrification of things, how everything has to be a big event now. Right. The NFL draft, 150,000 people in the streets of Detroit yesterday when it used to be, you know, 28 guys around some card tables. Prom used to be held in a gym. A wedding was a simple thing in a church and a banquet hall. Now you have promposals and you have the White House Correspondents' Dinner being turned into a, you know, again, a made-for-TV event. And it's not that we're going to go backwards. I just think every so often we need to remind people to stick to the basics. You know, why are you doing this event in the first place?
Right. Yeah. Why are you doing this event? And that's why, you know, I posted online about this, that the New York Times really, has just lost its way as far as what its real job is and what it and what and it's, you know, that it's just supposed to, it's supposed to go ferret out facts for the people, but it doesn't. I mean, it does sometimes. I mean, there's a lot of smart people at the New York Times. They do a good job sometimes, but the arrogance of the leadership and the, you know, in that political story, it was, well, you know, we've been tough on Trump. You have not been tough enough. I mean, you write a lot of, you know, when Trump gave his vermin speech, the New York Times original headline was, Trump's Veterans Day speech takes an unexpected direction. Yeah. I mean, really?
An unexpected direction.
And then they got mocked by me and other people online for that one, and they changed it. But they still didn't use the word vermin. No. The thing about it, Pat, is that the majority of the people in this country, I don't think they even know that he ever called his opponents vermin. And they, if they do, they may not know that it's total Nazi language, that's totally what the Nazis called people. They also don't know that Trump called for termination of the Constitution, which he did. And so the press's job is not just to report something once and then sleep on it. It's to remind people of important things they may not know and that will inform them as they make one of the most important choices of their lifetime and the lifetime of this country in November. That's their job. Their job is not to like clink glasses with politicians at a banquet. That's not, it ain't their job. And it actually gets in the way of their job, in my opinion.
I'm going to quickly remind folks that your work with Stop the Presses and Media Misses includes a new video with Stephen Beschloss about Trump's complicated relationship with police. A better word you write might be exploitative. A guy charged with 88 felonies pretends that he likes law enforcement. So don't miss out on the Media Misses and the Stop the Presses newsletter. But I have to ask you in just a couple of seconds. I know you're not the world's biggest sports fan there, but you're in Chicago. Is this quarterback now that they chose last night? Is this the chosen one? Is the city going to be okay?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I was actually for keeping Justin Fields. I was thinking, just draft a really good offensive lineman. I mean, just get somebody who knows how to block.
I think quarterbacks
are overrated.
Oh God, Mark Jacob, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. We're going to bounce this off of Dan Schumacher coming up next. You're up north.
Your rain falls like crazy fingers.
All right, guys, what do we got? Is this Grateful Dead or one of their many offshoots?
Crazy Fingers is the name of this.
So, Dan, I just want to tell you really quick. Last week, we were celebrating the life and times of Prince because he passed away 8 years ago last week. I'm like, what do I play for Dan? So I looked up Grateful Dead covers of Prince songs, which there are none that I could find, but I found a cover of Purple Rain with Bob Weir playing guitar. Of course you know it. Yep, he's shaking his head right. Yeah, yeah. December 18th, 2004. I was there.
Yeah, I posted it as well. I was so impressed with the song that I did give you credit, Craig.
Thank you.
Yeah. Before we jump into the sports, there's a couple of self-promotional things I've been neglecting here to tell you that you can head over to couriernewsroom.com and learn more about the newsletters from Mark Jacob, Kiev Akil, and others. Meanwhile, we have our own daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. In today's issue, we wrap up a week of articles where I outlined the many things the legislature didn't get done before Republican leadership put themselves on a 9-month paid vacation. On our website, we have how big a problem is medical debt in Wisconsin and what could some of our leaders do about it if they wanted to. And then on social media, look for our post about National License Plate Day. There's actually a lot of little historical landmarks when it comes to Wisconsin's license plates to know about. So look for Up North News on social media that way as well. But now we turn back to Dan Schumacher. We turn to the NFL draft, where I believe the Bears had something like, I don't know, 22 picks in the first round because they're just a sad shell of a team that they used to be. But never mind the rest of the picks. It's the Caleb Williams era in Chicago.
I would have traded it and kept Fields, but that would have been, you know,
this is for you, buddy.
Yeah,
this is, I promise you, I promise you, it's the only time we're playing this is because you had such a
the other song. The Bears still, you know what?
Yeah, you know, I could do that, but
no, I think he's a great talent. There's no doubt about it. The Bears did their homework. They spent a lot of time with him. Heck, he was in the Bears headquarters a month ago throwing with the receivers. I think between the new president of the Bears and the general manager, they wanted their own path of what they thought would be success for them in Chicago. I still believe that Fields will become the starting quarterback over Russell in the Steelers organization. But I did like the number nine pick, great receiver, physical receiver. I think when you really look at what Fields had to deal with talent at the receiver spot, and we had Claypool was injured most of the year off that big trade. But they got a first-round draft pick. They've got the pick from last year. They've got a great tight end in Kmet. I think the difference will be Caleb has a lot more weapons than Fields had. Okay. So I just don't believe that Fields got the fair shot, especially being a first-round draft pick. And what did they get, a fourth-rounder for him? That's it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was insulting almost.
For the Packers, their first-round pick was Jordan Morgan, who is quite likely going to end up filling David Bakhtiari's spot at left tackle. Morgan from Arizona said he actually had emulated David Bakhtiari as he, you know, developed into somebody good enough to be chosen in the first round with the 25th overall pick. The Packers have two second-round picks and two third-round picks coming up this evening, and then they have in the fourth through the seventh rounds, they have six more picks. So no lack of football draft action to watch today and tomorrow. For the Brewers, they beat the Pirates yesterday afternoon, 7-5. They split the four-game series with the Pirates. On the road trip, they went 5-2. They're now home for six games this weekend, three against the New York Yankees, starting at 6:35 tonight on News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, 98Q Country in Park Falls. And then, Dan, the Bucks now not only don't have Giannis, they probably don't have Chris Middleton with a sprained right ankle. Game three is this afternoon in Indianapolis against the Pacers. I don't know how the Bucks fans are coming out the other side of this weekend.
I don't know either. I don't. The injuries are devastating, mm-hmm. you know, for any kind of advancement. So I don't know. But at the same time, I turn around, I look at what's devastated the Cubs injuries, and they're still winning. So mm-hmm. I had to throw that plug in.
Oh, well, the Brewers starting pitching again. We've got three fourths of them are you know in sick bay some way, shape, or form, and they're still getting things done, still keeping things entertaining, at least. Right. And again, we got a long season ahead of us. Before I forget, again, the Bucks 4 o'clock pregame today on News from the Center, Lake Erin Amory, 98Q Country, and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. So, are you a draft fan? Is that couch appointment viewing for you?
Yeah, it is. It is. For me, the two picks that I was probably even more excited about just to watch. I thought the J.J. McCarthy, the Chicago kid from Michigan, going to the Vikings is interesting.
And that, too, was a case where he'd been working out with the team. So they both teams kind of knew where they were going early on. Okay.
But the big one that I liked the most, and I just feel like was underplayed, the fourth pick, Joe Alt, 6'8", 350 pounds, starting left tackle from Notre Dame, goes in the top – He is the largest man in the NFL for coming in this year. And I thought, man, the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh just got a find. At the same time, what's even more impressive, his father is in the NFL Hall of Fame, was a Hall of Fame tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs back in the early 80s. So he has a pedigree. I wish the Bears would have gotten him.
Speaking of father-son duos, Marvin Harrison Jr., he was big in college. Is he going to make the transition? I get a sense from him he's going to be the real deal.
He was. But what was baffling is that when he was being interviewed last night, his family and him regarding the draft, Marvin Harrison Sr. was not there.
I know. I was wondering about that.
I was Googling. I was all over the internet, Twitter, to find out what the deal was there.
I agree, and I should have thought of that earlier. I would have maybe tried to find more of this.
Hey, before we come off, I just want to
Got the Northland College. Yep, yep.
I just want to say thank you to all the people that have reached out to me. It really is a gem of a school in a really great, great northern part of Wisconsin, and the people in Ashland, Wisconsin are just wonderful. I really believe that we're coming upon a path forward instead of closing our doors, and hopefully over the next week, that becomes some more clarity, because, you know, I got 250 athletes just waiting to find out what's going to happen. There's so much people in limbo.
I am hoping that you get that.
The support's been great.
We will get an update next week. All right. Thanks, Dan. Have a good weekend. Thank you, Greg. We'll talk to you as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you back here Monday up north.